Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the bidder information session for the March 2023 solicitations. This is the fifth solicitation under PECO's fifth default service program, or DSP-5, as I'll call it throughout this presentation. My name is Katie Orlandi, and presenting with me today is Matt Pettit. We're from NERA Economic Consulting, who serves as the independent evaluator for PECO's DSP-5. And with us today are representatives from PECO who will be available to help answer any questions you may have at the conclusion of the presentation. So in today's presentation, we'll provide an overview of the DSP-5 program, details on the qualification and bidding process, and we'll also cover solicitation-specific information, including the products available and the calendar with deadlines. So all lines have been placed on mute to prevent background noise, but you can ask text questions throughout the presentation. If you have a question, you'll locate the Q&A panel on the bottom right-hand side of your screen. Type in your question, hit enter, and you'll submit it to all of the panelists. If you have any technical difficulties during the presentation, you can also use the Q&A panel to let someone know and someone will be in touch. So I'd like to note that any statements herein describing or referring to documents and agreements are summaries only and are qualified in their entirety by reference to such governing documents. The governing documents are the Pennsylvania Public Utilities Commission order related to PECO's default service program from December 3rd, 2020, the RFP rules and addendum to the RFP rules that were posted on December 20th, 2022, also, the PECO Energy Company Pennsylvania Default Service Supplier Master Agreement, or US Uniform SMA, as I'll refer to this document, which was also posted on December 20th. So these documents are all currently available on PECOProcurement.com. Documents related to the DSP-5 proceeding with the Commission are posted to the regulatory page, and then the RFP documents and contract are posted to the supplier information page. So as I mentioned, NERA serves as the third-party independent evaluator for the solicitations under DSP-5. Our role is to ensure a transparent process for the RFP, and specifically, we're the main point of contact with RFP bidders. We ensure the RFP rules that were approved by the Commission are followed and that qualifications are evaluated equitably and fairly. We will evaluate the bids received on a price-only basis, and then we present the results to the Commission. So the agenda for today's call is as follows. In the first half of the presentation, I'm going to cover DSP-5 and the products available in this March 2023 solicitation. I'll then provide an overview of the RFP process and the contract and rates. Then I'll pass the presentation to Matt, and he'll continue with the RFP process details, including the requirements to qualify to bid, and then the bid submission procedures that you would follow on the bid date. Matt's also going to provide an overview of the RFP website and how you can get in contact with us. And then at the end of the presentation, we can go through the questions that we receive. So under DSP-5, PECO will procure full requirement service for their default service customers. As listed in the bottom bullet here, full requirement service includes energy, capacity, ancillary services, certain transmission services, and alternative energy portfolio standard, or AEPS, requirements. Default service customers are those customers that do not elect to take service from an electric generation supplier or return to PECO after receiving service from an EGS. Under DSP-5, solicitations will be held in March and September of each year through 2024. And there'll be a total of 8 solicitations. And then the supply to be procured is generally for the period of June 1, 2021 through May 31st, 2025. But some contracts towards the end of DSP-5 will extend beyond the June 2025 period. Under DSP-5, there are products procured for 3 classes, as shown in this slide. And in this March solicitation, there are products available for all 3 classes. So the residential class consists of all residential customers. The small commercial class is commercial customers with less than 100 kW of annual peak demand. And then the consolidated large commercial and industrial class consists of commercial customers with 100 kW or greater of annual peak demand. Now, this slide provides the product characteristics of the classes. So suppliers for the residential and small commercial classes are paid on a fixed price basis, which is based on the supplier's average winning bid price for each megawatt hour of load served. So the bid is an all-in price. These two classes are served via laddered and overlapping one-year and two-year contracts that are procured twice a year. Suppliers for the CCI class are paid on the basis of three components: the energy component price to PJM's day-ahead market at the PICO residual aggregate zone, two, the capacity obligations price to PJM's reliability pricing model, and then three, the supplier's average winning bid price for each megawatt hour of load served. There's a product available for this class once a year in each March solicitation, and the supply period is for the 12 months starting in the upcoming, starting with the upcoming June 1. So for each class, the default load is divided into a number of tranches so that each tranche represents a fixed percentage of the load for that class. So for the residential class, there are a total of 62 tranches, and each tranche represents 1.6% of the default load for this class. There are 24 tranches for the small commercial class, and each tranche represents 4.17%, and then there are 8 tranches total of the CCI class, with each tranche representing 12.5% of the default load. This slide also provides the total and default peak information with an approximate megawatt measure for each class. This data was updated as of December 2022 and is applicable to the 2023-24 planning year. So as I mentioned, there are products for all three classes in this solicitation. The naming convention for each product is as follows. Each product has three labels. First, it's the customer class served. Second is the length of the supply period. And third is the date of the start of the supply period. So there are two products available in this solicitation for the residential class, a 12-month and a 24-month. And the supply period for both of these products starts on June 1, 2023. Same for the small commercial class. The available tranches are for 12 and 24 month products starting June 1, 2023. And then finally, there's a 12-month product for the CCI class also starting June 1, 2023. There are load caps that apply to a supplier so that it cannot supply more than 50% of the default load for a class at any point in time. The load caps in this solicitation will account for products that were won in prior solicitations under DSP-5. And then, so if you're looking for the information on the load caps, this is all housed in the addendum to the RFP rules, and that's currently posted on the website. That's also where you'd find the data from the slide, the prior slide as well, on the peak load data. So on this slide, we provide the available tranches and load caps for the residential class. Again, there are two products. For the 12-month product, there are 12 available tranches, and for the 24-month product, there are 11 tranches available. As I mentioned before, there are a total of 62 tranches for this class and a load cap of 50%. So in the case of the residential class, load caps are calculated as 31 tranches, 62 times 50%. Minus the tranches that a supplier is serving for products won in solicitations held so far in DSP-5 and that have a supply period that overlaps with the products available. And so the products that overlap with the upcoming supply period are listed in the table here. And so you can use this table in order to determine if you have a bidder specific load cap. And we'll also provide these load caps directly to bidders when they receive their bid form through the process. Load caps are calculated the same way for the small commercial class. There are two products available, 6 tranches for the 12-month product and 3 tranches for the 24-month product. As for the load caps, there are a total of 24 tranches for this class, so suppliers are constrained on the number of tranches they can bid to 12, minus the number of tranches they're currently serving for products for the small commercial class and in this table. For the CCI class, there are 8 tranches available, and since there are no overlapping contracts, all suppliers are capped at 4 tranches. As a final note, before we move to the RFP process overview, the results posting of PJM's base residual auction for the 24-25 delivery year has been delayed. A proceeding related to the BRA for the 24-25 delivery year, which was held in December 2022, is currently ongoing with the FERC. And as of the date of this webcast, the date by which results will be provided is not available. And so the results of the BRA for the 24-25 delivery year will provide a visible capacity price for the last 12 months of the 24-month product. And so we're noting here that if the results are not available by the bid date, then bidders that are offering to supply the 24-month products are entirely responsible for any uncertainty related to the lack of visibility of the capacity price for the 24-25 delivery year. In this next section of the presentation, I'll provide an overview of the stages of the RFP process. So we'll start off here with the schedule. The RFP process is going to kick off this week with the opening of the Part 1 form, and then it's going to proceed over the next 4 weeks. The application process is in 2 parts. So first, applicants will submit the Part 1 proposal with their qualification materials beginning this Thursday, February 16th, when we open the Part 1 form. The Part 1 proposal must be submitted by noon on the Part 1 date on February 28th. Applicants that qualify are notified that they can submit a Part 2 proposal on the Part 1 notification date, which is March 2nd. The following day, the Part 2 window opens, and applicants can start submitting their pre-bid security, and then the Part 2 proposal is due by March 9th. Bidders are notified whether they've qualified to submit bids by the Part 2 notification date on the 13th, and then the next day, March 14th, will be the bid date. And qualified bidders will have an opportunity to practice the bid submission procedures in a training that will hold on March 8th, the week before. By March 15th, the independent evaluator will submit its report on the RFP to the commission, and then the commission will render its decision by close of business on March 16th. So the RFP results on the bid date are contingent on final PUC approval. As I mentioned, we submit a confidential report on winning bids to the PUC on the day after the bid date, and then they'll issue a decision within 1 business day of receipt of the report. And then after 15 days of the close of the solicitation, some information is released. This includes the average winning bid price, and Matt's gonna touch on this posting more in the next half of the presentation. So the proposal process is entirely online. You're going to submit the Part 1 and Part 2 materials through online forms or by email. The materials include providing required information about the bidder and some supporting documentation. Bidders will also be required to upload or email signature pages that we refer to as inserts. And these inserts are provided by us in Microsoft Word format, and each insert contains the instructions for completing and signing the insert. And Matt'll go over the specifics of that requirement as well. And then the pre-bid letter of credit, which must be used for posting pre-bid security with the Part 2, is also submitted as an electronic PDF file to our email address, picoprocurement@nera.com. So as I mentioned, both the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals require submission of inserts. These inserts are already posted for you to download on picoprocurement.com They're on the documents page under supplier information. Applicants that are new, meaning they've never qualified in a solicitation held under DSP 5, need to download the zip file labeled P1 Inserts New Bidders. Applicants that have qualified in a solicitation under DSP 5 but do not have winning bids should download the zip file P1 Inserts Previously Qualified Bidders. Again, these are bidders that have completed the Part 1, received a notification that they were qualified with a Part 1 proposal or previously qualified. And then applicants that have had winning bids in a solicitation under DSP 5 should download the zip P1 Inserts Default Suppliers. And, you know, I'm emphasizing it because it's important that you start with the right set of inserts because that's going to match up with the online form when you log in. Also currently posted and seen at the bottom of this screenshot is a zip file P2 Inserts Early. These are the Part 2 inserts that require a signature. So if your officer wants to make all of the signatures at the same time, you can also download this file and you can upload them with your Part 1 proposal for early processing. If you're a new applicant and you've not registered for an account to access the online forms to submit your proposal, you should go ahead and do that now. You can register by going to picoprocurement.com and clicking on the Contact Us link on the left-hand side and then the Register for an Account link. Alternatively, you can send an email to picoprocurement.com with the information that's requested here on the slide. It's the individual that registers for the account that's going to receive an email from us prior to the Part 1 window with the information to activate the account for the bidder. Current account holders, you don't need to re-register through the website. A current account holder is an applicant that qualified to participate in a solicitation in 2021 or later, or an account holder that registered in 2021 or later. If you fall into this bucket, you'll just receive an account directly from us. And even though you don't have to re-register, you will have to activate your account in order to access the form. So for a bidder that qualified to participate in a solicitation in 2021 or later, the representative will receive an email with an activation link. If you're an account holder, but you have not participated, then it's the individual that registered for the account that'll get this email to activate. We'll also send instructions to access and complete the online forms to all account holders prior to the opening of the Part 1 window. I think we expect these to go out tomorrow or Thursday morning. And these instructions will include screenshots for how to activate your account. So the URL to access the online form is provided here on this slide. You can also get to the forms once you have an account through the procurement website on either side of the screen. So this next section is going to provide a few details on the contract and rates. So PICO uses the uniform SMA developed for DSP-3 with the same EDC-specific provisions included. Appendix D to the SMA includes the PJM billing statement line items, and it identifies the responsible party, either PICO or the default supplier for each item. Beginning with DSP-5, default suppliers are required to complete Appendix H each year. Appendix H is the form of generation supply report, and it requests a percentage breakdown of the energy supplied by source for the year. And this appendix should be completed and provided to PICO by March 31st of each calendar year. This slide provides the credit requirements under the uniform SMA. So for the fixed price products, credit exposure to PICO is based on a calculation of mark-to-market exposure that is net of accounts receivable or accounts payable to the supplier. For the spot price products, the credit exposure begins at $250,000 per tranche and is recalculated each month. Whether a supplier has to submit financial guarantees during the term of the SMA is dependent on a credit evaluation that is specified in the contract. Each RFP bidder will receive the results of the credit evaluation that's based on the financial documents and ratings that are provided in Part 1. And the credit of this credit evaluation is provided with the Part 1 notification, which is well ahead of contract execution for winning suppliers. If a financial guarantee is required, it can be posted in the form of cash, a letter of credit, or in the form of a guarantee. And there's a standard form of guarantee and a standard form of letter of credit that are provided as exhibits to the uniform SMA. Default suppliers are also responsible for providing alternative energy credits during the term of the uniform SMA for PECO to comply with the Alternate Energy Portfolio Standards Act, as well as other orders, regulations, and rules. An alternate energy credit is issued for each megawatt hour of generation from a qualified alternative energy system. All solar credits must be compliant and eligible to be retired in Pennsylvania in accordance with Act 40 from 2017, and all Tier 2 credits must be compliant in accordance with Act 114, which was signed into law in November 2020. If any requirement under the AEPS Act changes during the term of the SMA, it's the default supplier that's responsible to comply with new obligations. The current obligation for each type of AEC is provided here at the bottom of the slide. During the transaction confirmation process, each default supplier is required to specify the average cost for each type of AEC. And we'll remind you of this requirement throughout the process, yes, a few times. Under the terms of the Uniform SMA, a default supplier's AEPS obligation may be reduced by a number of AECs allocated to default suppliers in the transaction confirmation. The number of AECs per tranche to be allocated towards a default supplier's obligation is provided prior to the opening of the Part 1 window, and I'm going to supply that on the next slide. A note here that any PECO AECs that are allocated to a default supplier's AEPS obligation remain the property of PECO, and they're not transferred to the supplier. So this slide provides the number of AECs per tranche that PECO will allocate to the winning default suppliers in this March 2023 solicitation. So this slide provides some details on the rates. The default service rates for a class are calculated on the basis of prices determined through the RFP and incorporate a quarterly true-up and administrative costs. For the residential class, rates also include purchases by PECO to serve approximately 1% of the default load. In September 2021, PECO introduced time-of-use default service rate options for the residential and small commercial default customers with smart meters. Notably, the TOU options are not applicable to customers in PECO's customer assistant program. And there is a default service rate calculation model that's posted to PECO's website. The model is accessible through the link that's provided here at the bottom of the slide. So on this final slide in this section, I have some details here on PECO's agreement with the New York Power Authority. So under a multi-state agreement, PECO receives for the benefit of its residential customers an annual allocation of capacity and associated energy from the St. Lawrence Hydroelectric Project operated by NYPA. The allocation is dependent upon the number of residential customers that PECO serves and is 5.601 megawatts for energy year 2022-23. And a supplier's residential tranches are the share of the default load for the residential class that excludes this allocation. So that concludes that section, and I'm gonna turn it over now to Matt Pettit, who's gonna walk you through the requirements to qualify.
Thank you, Katie. So over the next several slides, I'll be discussing the details of the requirements and the process for the RFP. So this will include both the Part 1 and the Part 2 process. And this is not necessarily an exhaustive summary of the entire process, so we do encourage you to consult the RFP rules as well as the addendum. So again, there are two parts to the proposal, the Part 1 proposal to become qualified and the Part 2 proposal to become eligible to submit bids. Only RFP bidders that have successfully completed the Part 1 proposal can then move on to the Part 2 proposal. In addition, prior to the Part 1 proposal, there is an alternative guarantee process, which is strictly optional and is geared toward RFP bidders that have corporate policies which preclude them from using the standard form of the guarantee, which is appended to the uniform SMA. Bidders that have qualified pursuant to a complete Part 1 proposal will be able to participate in the bid submission training. And finally, bidders that have successfully completed the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals will become eligible to submit bids. So as I mentioned, the alternative guarantee process is for those RFP bidders that have corporate policies which preclude them from using the standard form of the guarantee. And in that case, bidders may submit an alternate form of guarantee and request consideration from PICO for use of that form. The deadline for requests for review was January 31st. Separately, RFP bidders will also have the opportunity to propose modifications to the standard guarantee during the Part 1 window. There will be three different types of RFP bidders for purposes of the Part 1 proposal. One of those types will be new bidders, which will be those RFP bidders who have not previously qualified, which is to say they have not successfully completed a Part 1 proposal under DSP 5. The second type of RFP bidder is a previously qualified bidder. This type of bidder is one that has previously qualified, which again means that they have successfully completed a Part 1 proposal, but they have not executed a uniform SMA for tranches 1 under DSP 5. And the third type of RFP bidder is a default supplier. And this designation is for those bidders that have previously qualified and executed a uniform SMA for tranches 1 under DSP 5. The second and third types of bidders, so not including new bidders, may be eligible to use an abbreviated Part 1 proposal process. So there are six discrete components to the Part 1 application. Bidders will provide contact information, including the name and address of the bidder, the designation of an officer who will be able to execute the contract and bind the bidder, and this individual will be responsible for signing all the required certifications and representations in both the Part 1 and Part 2 applications. The designation of an authorized representative who will serve as the point of contact, and optionally, the designation of nominees who will be copied on correspondence between the bidder and independent evaluator. In the second section, bidders will provide financial and credit information, including quarterly financial statements and credit ratings for the entity on whose financial standing the bidder is relying. So that could be the bidder's own financial standing, or it could be that of a guarantor. Additional information will be required for bidders submitting a proposal under an agency agreement. And then in the third section, bidders are asked but are not required to provide information to prepare the uniform SMA. So in the event the bidder goes on to become a winning bidder, that information would be used to prepare the SMA. And if the bidder elects not to provide this information with the Part 1 proposal, then they will have to provide it after bid date, assuming, of course, they do become a winning bidder. So bidders will have the opportunity to propose modifications to both the letter of credit that is appended to the uniform SMA that would be used during the supply period, as well as the pre-bid letter of credit that is used to provide financial guarantees with the Part 2 proposal. Bidders can propose modifications throughout the Part 1 date. But before doing so, we do encourage you to look at the modifications that have already been approved by PICO for use in the pre-bid letter of credit. And those are available on the RFP website. Additionally, if the proposed modifications you submit contain the same modifications as a previous solicitation, then the modifications will not be reviewed again, but you may request that the independent evaluator email to you PICO's assessment of that prior submittal. If you do choose to propose modifications, then they should be provided in Microsoft Word with tracked changes clearly showing all modifications that you are proposing. PECO will then review the changes, and responses will be provided within 2 business days for the standard letters of credit and standard guarantee. For the post-bid letter of credit, the review will be provided within 7 days. Any newly provided modifications for the solicitation will then be added to the list of acceptable modifications and posted to the RFP website ahead of the Part 2 proposal for use in the Part 2 proposal and beyond. So again, I mentioned the Part 1 proposal consists of 6 components. We discussed the first 3. In the 4th section, you will be required to make certain certifications and representations. So, for example, the information that is provided in the Part 1 proposal is true and complete to the best of the officer's knowledge. Bidders will be able to submit the representations required by the Part 2 proposal in their Part 1 proposal for early processing. Again, the officer will be required to sign all of these certifications and representations. So in the event they are unavailable to sign the Part 2 representations during the Part 2 window, we make that option available. For foreign RFP bidders or bidders relying on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor, there will be additional requirements. In these circumstances, there are additional documents that are required for the execution of the uniform SMA. Bidders to whom this applies will be able to submit drafts of these documents with their Part 1 proposal. And lastly, there is a section in the online Part 1 form for the justification of omissions, where bidders can explain the reasoning for any information that they were not able to provide. All materials for the Part 1 proposal are due by noon on Tuesday, February 28th. Part of the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals will require that the bidder complete inserts. And inserts are separate documents in Microsoft Word format. The way in which a particular insert must be signed and submitted is detailed in the header of each insert, and there are different streams through which the signature and submission process may progress. The bidder may use a digital signature so long as it is accompanied by an additional document or information that verifies the identity of the signatory. The bidder in certain circumstances may use an electronic signature so long as it is emailed to picoprocurement@nira.com either from the signer or with the signer on copy. And lastly, the bidder may use a notarized signature where the insert will be printed, signed, scanned, and uploaded to the online form. So following a bidder's submission of the online form, the independent evaluator will promptly review the proposal. And during the review process, the bidder's account will be temporarily locked. The bidder will receive either a complete notice, meaning all required information for the Part 1 proposal has been provided, or the bidder will receive a deficiency notice. In either case, the bidder will be advised about the status of its proposal on the same day if all materials are received before noon Eastern or on the following business day otherwise. If a bidder receives a deficiency notice, that notice will detail the items which require correcting or clarifying, and the bidder will generally have until either the deadline of the Part 1 proposal or 1 business day to respond to the notice. For those RFP bidders that successfully complete the Part 1 proposal, they will receive a Part 1 notification, and this notification is expected by Thursday, March 2nd. In addition to being notified that you have become qualified by completing the Part 1 proposal, you will also receive additional documents that are necessary for your continued participation in the proposal process, and that will include a credit assessment based on the financial information that you have provided with the Part 1 proposal. You will receive a customized bid form and instructions on the bid submission process. You will also receive confidential login information so that you can participate in the bidder training and submit bids on the bid date. Moving on to the Part 2 proposal, all bidders will be required to provide a number of certifications and representations, as I mentioned before. These can be provided during the Part 1 window for early processing if you choose to do so. Certain bidders have additional requirements. So, for example, those bidders that are relying on the financial standing of a guarantor would be required to provide an intent to provide a guarantee from the guarantor. And also these bidders are asked to provide information to prepare the guarantee. If the bidder is a foreign entity or is relying on the financial standing of a foreign entity, then that bidder is also asked to provide the documents that will be required with the uniform SMA. And finally, all bidders will be providing a pre-bid letter of credit, and I will provide more detail on this on the next slide. But just to note that the letter of credit must be submitted only via electronic means in PDF format to the independent evaluator at picoprocurement@nira.com, and hard copy versions are not acceptable. All Part 2 proposals are due by March 9th. So again, all bidders will provide a pre-bid letter of credit in an amount of $250,000 per tranche that the bidder intends to bid on the residential and small commercial products, and $125,000 per tranche on the CCI product. So for a bidder that intends to bid on all available tranches for the residential and small commercial, the maximum amount of the pre-bid letter of credit will be $8 million. And the maximum amount required to bid on all tranches for the CCI product will be $500,000. Now, it is possible that a bidder is not eligible to bid on all tranches, and that would be true if the bidder has a binding bidder-specific load cap. And this bidder-specific load cap is also why the independent evaluator issues to each bidder a customized bid form. For purposes of submitting the letter of credit, each bidder must use the standard form of the pre-bid letter of credit as posted to the website, or incorporating only approved modifications, which is all, those modifications are also posted to the website. So that's going to complete the overview of the requirements for the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals, and I'll now discuss the bid submission process as well as the post-bid process. So a bid is a price in dollars per megawatt hour for one tranche of a product. It is automatically rounded to the nearest cent using standard rounding rules. The officer of the bidder will have certified that the bid is binding until 6 business days after the bid date. And the bid date, excuse me, the bid must be sufficiently supported by the pre-bid security, and we will confirm this is the case when we receive your bid form. Bids will then be evaluated by the independent evaluator on a price-only basis. So here's an example of the bid form, and prior to the bid date, each bidder will be provided a personalized bid form to be submitted on the bid date. Section 2 of the bid form provides the area for the bidders to enter prices, wherein the bids in each cell serve as a bid on a single tranche. The bid form will provide running totals for your convenience, and additionally will provide a check as to whether you have exceeded your load cap. The load caps will be hard-coded by us on a per bidder basis prior to you receiving your bid form. On bid date, your bids must be submitted between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. on Tuesday, March 14th. Bids are submitted online through a secure file transfer system, and we will call you and confirm receipt within 30 minutes of submission. Bidders will have the opportunity to correct errors if there are any, and for this reason, bidders are encouraged to submit early. Bidders will have a minimum of 10 minutes to submit any non-conforming bid form, and this process will be outlined to you in the bidder guide provided with the Part 1 notification. By 6 p.m. on the bid date, we determine provisional winning bids and inform bidders whether or not they are provisional winning bidders. And winning bids remain provisional until approved by the Commission, and that decision will be made by March 16th. Bidders may participate and are encouraged to participate in a training session on March 8th, at which time members of our team will be available to answer questions, and bidders will be able to practice the bid date procedures in full. Following our notification to winning suppliers, bidders will be asked to provide information to prepare the uniform SMA and guarantee if they are not provided with the Part 1 proposal. The Commission will issue a decision by the second business day following the bid date, at which time we provide PICO with the uniform SMA, transaction confirmations, and guarantee. PICO will then execute the contract documents and send the documents to winning suppliers, and bidders will execute and return the contract documents as well as post additional security if necessary. So So 15 days after the bid date, certain information will be posted and announced by us, namely the weighted average winning bid price by product and the number of tranches of each product procured. Of note is the names of winning suppliers are not released. And to round things out, I'm going to provide some brief information related to the RFP website. Again, the website is picoprocurement.com, and it is the central source of information relating to the RFP. It has the supplier and regulatory documents, a data room with historical data, a calendar page with important dates, a contact us page to register to receive email announcements relating to the RFP, as well as an archive page of postings from past solicitations for reference, and that archive page will also have the results from those prior solicitations. Please feel free to send us any and all questions either through our online portal, which is pictured below, or by email to picoprocurement@nira.com. We aim to answer questions within 2 business days, and we post those questions online after removing any identifying information. So that will round things out for the presentation portion of this webcast. We will now take a few minutes to review any questions we received before providing answers. If you have a question that you have not already sent through the Q&A function, please do so now. You can locate the Q&A panel on the right-hand side of your screen, type in your question, and click enter to submit your question. Thanks. We'll be back in a few.